shot in the dark. Where he sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. Episode 305. Oh, man, it is Holy Thursday or Thursday of Holy Week. What do they call it? Monday Thursday? Is that right? I should look that up and figure out why they call it that. Hold on, coffee sip. Oh, I tell you what, I am a very happy camper at the moment. Why? A, because I'm off work from the day job, which I like my day job, but it's good to be off work, especially during Holy Week. And see, here's the thing is like when you own or run a business, I don't own this business, but it's kind of the same thing as whenever I've owned businesses in the past, when you're kind of responsible for everything. And this is the life of an entrepreneur. Like if you're open, if your shop is open, if your baby's moving, it's like being a parent. I mean, you parents out there, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're off work. It doesn't matter what's going on. It doesn't matter if the kid's playing on the playground and you're just talking to someone. You're on. It's like, well, when your baby is a business, there's times when you can kind of like 95% be off. Now, yes, something could still blow up or something, but no one's there to find out about it. So it's like, you know, so I slept in this morning and I left my phone like off. It's like I haven't done that on a weekday in a very long time. So, yeah, gearing up on Holy Week, digging some downtime. So we got something a little weird going on today, for the show. And so a little housekeeping here. So yesterday I did an interview with John Sehorn, Dr. John Sehorn, a friend of mine who teaches us at the AI. And, he's a young professor, you know, it's really funny and we have a really funny, interesting kind of intellectual relationship. But one of the things that we do constantly is we quote the Big Lebowski. So we're just like totally throwing Lebowski quotes back and forth. It's been kind of a joy. So finally we're trying to get him on the show for a long time, talk about some early church stuff. And, you know, I wanted to kind of maybe dig into some resurrection kind of history issues and stuff. So I got him on the show yesterday and we planned to do four segments. Just a one show, segments 1 through 4. And we just weren't done. We were just too much joking around. So what you're getting today is my intro segment. And then you're going to hear the first half of first three segments of my interview with John. And then tomorrow you're going to get another intro segment. And then the final three segments. Now, I'm warning you in advance. This is just like... this is one of the stranger interviews I've done. We go really, really geeky on the intellectual side and language and all kinds of stuff. At the same time, if you're not one of the subculture that likes the movie, The Big Lebowski, which as I said before, and I'm saying again, I'm not recommending on a Catholic channel that anyone go watch it. It does have a copious amount of cussing in it, but it has a deep and abiding following within the Catholic world, mostly among guys. A lot of guys in general love the movie, but so it's full of stuff that's going to sound like absolute gibberish. So if you listen and you're like, why did he just say, "I'm proud we are of all of them"? Why did that? That's actually a quote from the Big Lebowski. So it's like, there's me and John just going on and on about intellectual matters and about Augustine, his attitude towards sex and his common law wife that he had that he couldn't marry because of Roman law and all this stuff, you know, it's pretty interesting. So, and this is a pretty juicy interview. We talk about Origen and castration. We talk about, all kinds of fun stuff. So there's lots of interesting stuff in there. And then really geeky language stuff about the origins of words and stuff. Anyway, so it's a fun interview, but it's going to sound like after you finish listening to this segment, you're going to hear me come in on the first segment, and I'm going to be like, "Welcome to the Counterposition, episode 305," just like I just did That's because we thought we were going to do the whole episode with John, and that was it. We had a good time, so we went long. So we're going to have to split it over 2 days. So there's my little housekeeping. So we're gearing into Holy Week. I'm probably going to save my kind of real reflections for tomorrow's intro segment, spiritual reflections and whatnot. You know, Thursday, let's just kind of put ourselves in the mindset for a second of what's happening. You know, I talked about this when I was talking about the palms the other day. So put yourself in like Peter's position. Okay. You are a fisherman, gets caught up in this movement. You know, your brother Andrew like takes off, you know, or not. Yeah. Yeah. So your brother goes off into the boons in the middle of nowhere because he's probably kind of the more impetuous, kind of like, you know, moved by ideas and new stuff kind of a guy, you know, and you're the solid guy that stays home and fishes. Let's just look at Peter for a second. And then your little brother shows up and he's like telling you about how they went out and they saw John the Baptist that everyone's been hearing about. And this dude, and he's got like a camel hair robe and he's eating, he's got, you know, locusts and wild honey stuck in his beard from eating it. And he's out there like dunking people in a river. It told him that their sins are forgiven. And while they go out there to check out this new prophet slash guru or whatever, they went out a road that was really, really known for people who were trying to fund the revolution. The zealots and all these people that were trying to fund a violent revolution against the Romans would like sack people and like mug them on that road. And people like Barabbas that we're going to see later on Friday, right? He was a revolutionary. The people like Barabbas were out there mugging people, taking their crap and going and using that money to fund this revolution, right? And they made it through all the way out and all the way back two times going down this sketchy road. Get out there, see this thing, and then encounter this person that they don't know what to do with. And the guy that they went to see goes, look, the Lamb of God. He calls him the same thing as that lamb that they slaughter in the temple back in Jerusalem where, you know, well, what are you talking about? And then they follow him, and he turns around and goes, what are you looking for? What are you seeking? And they, where do you dwell? Where do you stay? He says, come and see. And so Andrew, and I guess it's John, they think, the other disciple, we know about this from the book of John, it's the only one we find it. They go hang out with Jesus all day, right? And so then Peter's heard about this, right? And he gets caught, and then you see it later on in the other gospels. He comes along and he's like, there's that dude that I told you about. He comes, hey, follow me. And they both feel it. And they're like, yeah. And they drop their nets and they go. So for 3.5 years, they've been rolling around, listening to this stump speech and all these things about the kingdom of God and all this stuff. And him telling different places, he's preaching the same thing over and over again, tweaking it for the audience to kind of make it more hit home for them. That's why they could write this stuff down so accurately. That's why we see the same speech taking place in certain different contexts and different gospels, because he's probably got a message, kind of like a politician doing on a campaign. He's out there preaching a certain message, and they probably heard some of these parables with slight tweaks to them several times. And they've been running around this guy for 3.5 years, and then it starts getting sketchier, and there's more opposition, and so then it all comes to a head, right? And he's dead set on going to Jerusalem. He sets his face like flint towards Jerusalem after he appoints Peter his successor. He goes, hey, I'm going to give you the keys of the kingdom. Peter knows what that means. He's appointing him as his al-Bayit, his prime minister. It's from the Old Testament, right? He's going to say, you're going to carry the keys of the kingdom. You're going to be ruling my stead while the king has gone away on a long journey. And he's like, what? And he goes, now I got to go to Jerusalem and be crucified. No. And he goes, heaven forbid. And he says, get behind me, Satan. Why? Peter knows what he's walking into. We talk about this in the interview later. I mean, Jerusalem is like Lollapalooza at this point. I mean, it's like this place is like at 5, 6, 7 times capacity. I mean, it's like it's slammed. This is when insurrections happen. That's why Pilate and all of them are so worried about this stuff, right? This place is crammed full of people, right? And he goes in. And they greet him as a king with these palms and all this stuff, right? And then everything just goes to hell in a handbasket. And he gets, so Thursday night, that night, we get the Eucharist. Tonight, we get the Eucharist. They're going to have the Mass of the Last Supper tonight at 7 o'clock at my church. So God incarnate in Jesus Christ is going to give them the Eucharist, which is the continuing incarnation of Christ among his people. And then they're going to go out to the Mount of Olives, right? And then they're going to show up. Judas is going to betray him, and they're going to take him away. Now, Peter is sitting there just like caught up. Now, he's been caught up in a political insurrection now. He doesn't know what's going on. Everyone else runs away. At least he has the guts to stick around long enough and get accused and deny Christ three times. The other guys aren't even there to deny him. He's literally risking his life. If they identify him as one of the co-conspirators with this guy that claimed to be the king, the Romans hate him because he claims to be a king. The Jews hate him because he says he's going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. And the only thing that the Romans care about is their law and their king. And the only thing the Jews care about is the temple, right? And here he is, and he's aligned with them. If he gets busted, they could crucify him right next to Jesus, right? That's where we're at tonight. Tonight, we're going to get the Eucharist. We're going to get the continuing. We're going to get the presence of God, the beginning of the priesthood. We're going to get all this, everything that we think about, almost all the things that we think about normal, like a priest and going to Mass and receiving the Eucharist. Everything that we think about as Catholics, that's going to happen tonight, right? That's Thursday night. So, all right, well, let's go to the break here soon, and when we do that, when we come back, you're going to hear me reintroducing the show because I thought I was introducing the show, and you're going to hear three very funny, very raucous, very geeky, segments of me and, the good Dr. John Sehorn. And then tomorrow you're going to get another intro segment and you're going to get the final three. So, hey, have a great Holy Week and, pray for me.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood, the only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. Hi.
Then where all sugar falls.
Andrew Whaley. Here on the Red Box Media. Dancing. All right, kids, here we go. Episode 305. Oh, look who it is, man. Look at this guy. It's Frollo from Ho Pro Mogo. Father Michael O'Loughlin. 1/4 of the Catholic Stuff You Should Know podcast. You know, that's right. My studio audience is a member of the biggest Catholic podcast in America, ladies and gentlemen. In my studio audience, right here. He comes to listen to me. He's good. All right. So, hey, it's episode 305. I never thought I'd get to 300. I'm shocked every time I say that. Drinking more of this beautiful Columbia Las Acacias from Commonwealth. And it's a nice afternoon in Holy Week. And I have a special treat for you guys. Are you ready? I know what you're thinking. No, not that. Not Chris. Special treat Stefanik. A different special treat. I make this joke every single time. I love the bait and switch him because the one time I did interview Chris last week, and it's like, ah, it really is him. All right, so please welcome to The Counter Position, my friend, coffee imbiber, and fellow interlocutor and overall achiever, Dr. John Sehorn.
Hey, man, I'm happy to be here and to disappoint you all by not being Chris Stefanik.
I mean, we're all disappointed that we're not Chris Stefanik.
I mean, who wouldn't be, right?
I mean, he looks good in those red pants. That's all I'm saying.
Red pants and flip-flops, what more do you need?
Dude, I'm telling you, he is the dude.
Week-old pizza? Just to round out the image.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, he eats pretty well. He eats well.
Hence the svelte form.
Dude is svelte. You know what? No, I'm gonna tell something on Chris. Well, I can't embarrass Chris. Chris's 14-year-old daughter ripped hair out of his back with wax on my show.
That's not apocryphal?
No, that happened.
That happened.
That, like, it's episode 301 or 299. One of the two. No, it's episode 299. Yeah. We wax Chris's back on the air.
Hold on. I got to pick my jaw off the floor.
Right. Exactly. Though his, so I'm not, that he, I can't embarrass Chris on the show with this, but no, his svelte form is from, boxing.
No way.
Yeah. He does like hardcore boxing workouts and stuff. He does like kettlebells and stuff like that. But dude goes when he's in town and he goes to boxing gyms and does box. He has a trainer. Like he does boxing workouts. He and I have like hit hands at his house and like boxed. Dude, like, wears me out. Like, that is a huge workout.
That's legit.
Have you ever fought? You ever boxed?
No. No, but...
You ever just knocked a fool out because he was just talking crap?
Only twice today so far, I think.
Right on. Yeah. Sometimes you got to put up another play, show him who's boss.
No, my first theology professor ever was Father Brian Daly, SJ, mm-hmm. who is over 80 and still trains boys for Bengal bouts at Notre Dame.
Nice.
Oh yeah, no, he'll clean your clock for sure.
So have you?
You got to watch your heresy around him.
Can you take a punch?
Can I take a punch?
Yeah. Can you take a punch?
From whom?
From someone who can throw a punch.
Is that what you brought me here for, Andrew? Like, to find this out
can
today?
Can I punch you on the air?
Yeah, come on, just go ahead. Reach over.
just boom.
Come on.
That'd be awesome.
No, it's fine. Come on.
No, it's good. It'd be awesome. Like, it's penance, you know? It's holy.
You are entering a world of pain.
You're in a world of pain.
Market zero.
Next frame. All right. So one thing that you have to know about my relationship, which is going to become very apparent soon, once you're privy, is Dr. Seahorn and I, John, if I may, We
in the parlance of our times,
we speak largely in Big Lebowski quotes, which those who have beers to hear, let them hear. I'm not recommending if you listen to my show, you're not going to be offended by the Big Lebowski, but there are some F-bombs and the occasional booze.
Some.
It's okay. Okay. The F-bomb only edit that's on YouTube is 3.5 minutes long, I think. So,
Yeah.
There's some. Well, some is technically logically correct. All right, so listen. Come on, we can't.
What are you going to split hairs?
Oh, this is going to be so fun. Oh, so it's already 1:10, man. No, it's not. It's fine. It just wasn't so grasping for a quote. All right, so Dr. Seahorn, we got to get out of this this loop. You teach here at the Augustine Institute, where we are recording in a bunker underneath the center of the new evangelization, somewhere nestled in the Rockies, not unlike NORAD. And that's what I'm recording here. I always say, I am coming to you from a bunker underneath a center for the new evangelization, nestled somewhere in the Rockies, not unlike NORAD. So what do you teach here? What are you talking about here?
Well, you know, the usual things, bowling, drive around, the occasional evangelical flashback.
Occasional evangelical flash. Oh, so many good quotes.
My grandma's not going to hear this, is she?
Totally.
Oh, man. What do I teach here? I teach church history and scripture.
Church history and scripture.
Yeah.
So do you specialize New Testament, Old Testament?
Do I spell? Oh, well, this could get delicate, right? My training's in Old Testament. I teach New Testament so far. You know, when you've got Dr. Edward Sri.
So you're privy to all the New Testament.
I'm privy to all the new. It's come to light, man. It's come to light.
New Testament.
It's come to light.
The new covenant has come to light, man.
But no, you know, so
instead of sitting around, running around blaming Moses, you know, it's hard to keep them down on the farm. Let's say,
man, they exiled themselves.
Okay, so just for the record, during this show, if we're saying something that sounds like absolute gibberish, it is a pun on a quote from the Big Lebowski. It's just like, if there's going to be like six people are going to be like, that was the best show I have ever heard. The rest of my audience is going to be like, what on earth were they talking about?
Okay,
so New Testament and not church history. Where are you? Early church?
Yeah, no. So actually, my main training in grad school was in the Fathers.
Okay.
So patristic theology, especially patristic exegesis. My dissertation was on Origen of Alexandria's homilies on Ezekiel. So that's where you get the kind of Old Testament, early church vibe coming together.
All right. So, because I was like, so you're like, no, I really like that old stuff. And I like when they're talking of the stuff that came after. But like that crux of like the center of all time and space.
Well, dude, I read it, right? I read the New Testament. I've like read it once or twice.
That whole incarnation kind of leaves me flat, you know? That whole God becoming man, snooze. Give me some good old-fashioned exegesis by a guy with a beard, man. No, I'm kidding. I love the Fathers. I'm a fan. Many fathers, all kinds of fathers. I hang out with fathers all the time.
So what's the first thing you think of when you hear Origin of Alexandria, Andrew?
Honestly?
I know the answer.
It's castration.
He didn't do it.
He didn't do
it? I don't think he did it.
Yeah, so
Origin. This is still controversial. I thought he did.
Right.
Man, I thought he did the deed. I don't think he did.
So the story is that he, in fact, self-castrated himself to be a eunuch for the kingdom of God or whatever. You know, like basically he. Or maybe he's just, he was strung. I mean, you know, if he reads in the gospel, if your eye offends you, if your hand offends you, cut it off. I mean, it's like, and he's a man, he's dealing with sexual temptation or whatever. The legend says he castrated himself.
That's the
right?
legend. Yep, that's the legend.
So you don't think he did?
No, you want like the full argument on the. We do footnotes on this show, man. Why can't you just take my word for it? I'm coming in here and telling you didn't do it. You should be like, whew, I feel so much better about my man Origen.
I'm sure he feels better. I mean, it's like, hey, Origen, man.
Dude, I could be wrong. People did crazy stuff, right? So Jerome talks about one of the desert monks. I can't remember which one, right? And now if you were in, you know, the late ancient world, you want a bishop. You want a holy bishop, right?
Right.
Right. You don't want one of these career men.
Right.
And so what do? You go out to the desert and you get yourself a bishop.
Right, exactly.
Well, what's the last thing a monk wants to do?
It'd be a bishop.
Well, that's right. So
this is Platonic, man. You go take the philosopher, you make him king.
And so, well, yeah, so they go out and this one dude, I can't remember his name. I should have looked it up. I need to do my homework before I come on this show.
You got
to
come
on. I know. So they go out and they get him and they're like, yo, you're going to be our bishop. And he's like, yo, I don't think so. And they're like, yeah, you got to come with us. So homeboy pulls out a dagger, cuts off his ear.
Yes.
And quotes to him from the law of Moses that a man who's not whole will not enter the sanctuary of the Lord. Right. And they're like, oh, no. So they go back and tell the church that had sent them like, yeah, we got to find somebody else. He cut off his ear. They're like, man, that's old covenant stuff. Go back and get him. So they made him come back one ear.
That's amazing.
You're the bishop.
I thought he was going to be like, okay, fine. He picks up the ear, puts it back on. It's healed. He's like, let's do this.
You know? There are advantages to being in the garden with Jesus.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, well, I mean, look at like, Mary of Egypt. Right. I mean, she's like totally like alcoholic, sex addict, the whole nine yards. And she like goes out in the desert, like throws herself in hot sand and stuff and everything. Those dudes were serious.
Yo, listeners, if you've never read the story, the life of St. Mary of Egypt by St. Sophronius of Jerusalem, that's your homework this Holy Week.
There you go. St. Sophronius.
St. Sophronius, 7th century. Dude, he's the bishop who handed over the keys of Jerusalem to the Muslims.
Oh my God.
Awkward.
That's super awkward. All right. And on that note, on this awkward note, you're having him read some dude that gave up to the Muslims. All right. It's fine. All right. Well, we're with Dr. John Sehorn and we're going to be talking about, papers, business papers when we get back. And
I'm unemployed.
It's like, all right. Not yet.
After this interview,
you might be. All right. You're listening to The Counter Position. We'll be right back.
Then how we crave a hanging in its dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People sing sing, and please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to the Counter Position. I am your posted up and Holy Week drinking Commonwealth Las Acacias, hanging out with a historian from Notre Dame, using the correct pronunciation host, Andrew Whaley. And we're here with Dr. John Seahorn.
Yo.
So, a listener who's a very good friend of mine, I used to just, as this like kind of like trope, kind of like just this verbal habit, I used to always say, I am your humble host, and he like called me on it. You say humble host every time. So I kept saying, I am your tired host. I am your, I started throwing these other adjectives out there as a joke, and I ran out of them. So now I do these big, long, like completely stream of consciousness, like extended adjectives like that.
Self-inflated, turgid with pride host.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely sinful. Terrible.
This show just got so Augustinian, man.
Well, you are at the Augustine Institute. All right, so there you go. Early church, we were talking about sexual temptation and the way to react to it with or not to react to it with Origen earlier. I got a question for you as an early church scholar.
Shoot,
would the church and our dogma, kind of at least our emphasis of how we talk about things, be a little different if Augustine had knocked up his girlfriend in college? It's basically he had it. They call it a concubine, whatever. He had a girlfriend, right?
And he had a common law wife. So when Augustine writes about this later on, in On the Good of Marriage,
yeah,
right. He doesn't bring himself up,
yeah,
but he talks about exactly the kind of union he had with her, a full Roman legal matrimonium. Right, so matrimonium is like full Roman legal marriage.
Yeah,
is not available to someone like Augustine and someone like his common law wife because of the class difference.
Class differences, right?
But the church recognized those as true marriages. So the issue was not like, you know, if you read Confessions on this carefully, there's a wonderful article about this by what's her name, Danuta Schanzer, I think her name was, scholar, wrote a. Are you ready for some Latin? I'm going to drop it on you. Cover, son.
Dignum it used to mess, man.
Avulsa a latere meo. What does it mean? Hit me.
Avulsa
a latere meo.
Aversion.
Dude's car got a little banged up.
Avolt.
Right, so torn yeah. from my side, right? So actually the way when Augustine separated from this common law wife, I have to say, like, the one time Gary Wills ever got it right, if you know who Gary Wills is,
yeah,
is actually not his translation of Confessions, which should be avoided even more than the bubonic plague, but his book on Augustine. It's just a short little book.
Yeah.
It's one of the first things I ever read in Augustine. And there's a lot of good stuff in there. He calls her Una, just for the one, right? Because
really?
Augustine doesn't name her. Why doesn't he name her? Because he's protecting her.
Oh.
She's still in a convent in North Africa. Can you imagine if 397, 400 rolls around, Confessions hits the presses, people, it's going gangbusters, they're flying off the shelf, and people are like, oh man, we get to see the bishop's dirty laundry. And then they find out her name. And it's like, oh yeah, you were the bishop's woman. How about that?
Oh,
but no, when he talks about the end of the relationship, he says that she was torn from his side.
Wow.
And that he trailed blood. I think it's at the end of book six of the Confessions. And I think that this is supposed to be a kind of, it's almost like a failed image of the crucifixion.
Wow.
Right? It's a failure of solidarity. Whereas Christ is the bridegroom who stands with the bride, even in her sin, but without sharing in her sin, this kind of totally self-emptied solidarity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying by any means that these are in all respects parallel cases, but I do think that became the kind of icon in Augustine's own meditations on his past with respect to this woman.
So this is fascinating. I was, because I look at Augustine and I love Augustine.
I think he's fast.
Yeah, but you read too much 20th century literature on Augustine.
But I no, but I, maybe I do. But I think that it just seems like, you know, there is kind of a, you know, like Weigel said about theology of the body, that it's like this theological time bomb that's set to go off sometime in the next couple centuries. And when it does, he says it will purge from the church the last vestiges of Manichaeism. Right? And it seems like there is kind of a, yeah, there's a little bit of a, there's a little bit of a like a hang up on this one, when this one subject comes up and we try to talk about
it. Yeah, that's the problem though, right? Is when you try to read it as a one subject in Augustine, and it never is.
Right.
Augustine is the master, the late ancient Christian master of the hermeneutic of suspicion. Hmm. Right? It's like Lenin said, you see who's going to profit.
I am the walrus.
The islet, Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov.
I am the walrus.
Right? No, so listen, like, Augustine on sex, you, as soon as you try to, like, extract that from everything else he talks about, you're going to denature the conversation.
He thinks it's a zesty, natural enterprise.
Well, okay, at the very least, we know that modern interpreters of Augustine think it's a zesty, natural enterprise. That's what they want to kind of pull out.
But doesn't Augustine say that every act of sex, even in marriage, has a venial sin attached to it?
Yeah, Augustine does think that there's a way in which that mark of self-interest goes so deep,
mm-hmm.
right? That it's almost like when you read the City of God, and he tries to talk about
the Civitate Dei,
when he tries to think about what would sex like look like in the garden before the fall, if there hadn't been a fall, and he actually almost alone among the fathers says that there would have been sex. Between
really?
Adam and yes, without the fall. Absolutely. But what you find is we don't even have vocabulary to talk about it because our vocabulary has been so warped by lust.
Hmm.
Right? By a disordered approach to
right.
sexuality. Now, interestingly, there's one other like register of discourse where Augustine thinks that the Latin language is actually so impoverished that there is not a word. And it's worship. In book 10 of the City of God, he kind of says, okay, it's like a famous argument. What will make everyone wants to be happy?
Yeah.
What's going to make you happy? What's going to make you happy is clinging to your highest good.
Right.
What's our highest good? It's God. How do we cling to God? Through worship. So he says, what is the worship that is due to God alone? And he's even saying, like, what do we call it? We can't call it cultus. Mm-hmm. We can't call it. And he goes through all these different possibilities.
Wasn't it like hyperdulia? Isn't that what they end up with?
Or? Well, now you're not speaking Latin, are you?
That's Greek.
That's Greek. Or, and right. That's actually Augustine says, we don't have a Latin word that even works for this. Because the empire, the city of man, has so infected our language that we don't even have like adequate. So we just have to use the biblical Greek word. So he's like, let's call it latria. In fact, even fast forward, what, 850 years to the angelic and common doctor, right? Even when Aquinas writes about this,
right.
Adoratio is not a technical equivalent for latria. The only word Aquinas has for the worship that's due to God alone is latria.
Wow. Okay. First of all, this has got to be the geekiest show that I've ever had mixed with Big Lebowski quotes. This is spectacular. wasn't it Heidegger that said that that you could only properly do philosophy in Greek, maybe in German? It's like we don't think about.
I think you're confusing Heidegger with his Wikipedia entry.
No,
I'm kidding.
That was cold, man.
I know. I'm kidding, man. I'm kidding.
No Zeiner's eyes for you. I'm just saying that it seems like there. It is pretty interesting that if you want to impoverish an experience, like I say, you're the devil hypothetically, and you got this multi-pronged approach.
Hypothetically.
Yeah, well, you are pretty scary looking, but let's say you're hypothetically the devil or whatever, and you want to impoverish people's experience of it, of something. One way to do that, one of the multiple prongs, is to attack their language and to impoverish their language.
I had the most diabolical idea.
Yeah.
Let's limit people's self-expression on really difficult, controversial topics to 140 characters.
There you go. Exactly.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You know, this is stuff to where everyone's going to read it. Everyone has a megaphone. And so we want to, and we're going to talk about the most absolutely controversial stuff. And even the president's going to have one and use it all the time. Let's build into the framework an absolute lack of nuance.
Hey, did you remember to invite your listeners to follow me on Twitter?
I did forget. Yeah, follow John on Twitter at Dr. Love. Do you have a Twitter?
I don't have one. No.
Come on, man. You got to get with it. I'm at Andrew Whaley at Counterposition.
I just got an 8-track deck. I'm so pumped, man.
Dude, that's
so pumped.
Amazing.
Man. High fidelity.
Okay. I went to Whole Foods the other day, and they were selling – I felt bad because it was like for the benefit of the Whole Planet Foundation, which I haven't checked the Whole Planet Foundation. It might be sketchy. I don't know. They had vinyl, 3 for $5, and I scored Tom Jones Live in Las Vegas.
Oh, my goodness.
Which I used to have when we like in our house when I was – like in the 90s when we had our turntable. We used to – cocktail parties, we would play – Tom Jones left Las Vegas, and I lost my copy, and they had it. I think it was an act of the Holy Spirit. What do we do with 20 seconds
20
after
seconds
the,
after
that?
That? We do the Carlton dance?
Only if this was a video. Yeah, I mean, did you see the Dancing on the Stars when he did that? He was on? And he did that. He broke it. They're doing all this tango stuff, and they just like switched the music, and he broke into it on the show.
No,
that would have been amazing. That was like the best thing that's happened to TV in the history of the media. All right, let's go to the break.
Where are we?
We're going to the break. That's what we're talking about. Counterposition. We'll be right back.
Then all the colored glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dumb.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your giddy and over-caffeinated host, Andrew Whaley, and I am still here with the lovely and talented Dr. John C. Horn. Welcome back.
Nice marmot, Andrew.
And that ain't legal either, man. What are you, a park ranger now? Do I look like I'm married? The seat is up, man. So this has been the most geeky, like, details of historical theology, Latin and Greek, with Big Lebowski.
So the plane has crashed into the side of the mountain.
There's so many places I could go with this. All right, so I'm proud we are of all of them. So,
Spy Wednesday.
Okay, let's just for a split second, let's go back. So,
all right.
The axe I was trying to grind is my, and I'm boxing with Modern Shadows to a certain extent here, but it seems like, John Paul II came along with theology of the body and love and responsibility before that and everything, and kind of started talking about how, kind of throwing out the other side of the goodness, the healing nature, the communicative of deeper spiritual architectonic kind of reality. That is the human act of sex within marriage. And it kind of, when you read him and you read Augustine, there seems like Augustine just seems way more negative on the thing. But during the break, you were saying that he says that even though that we shouldn't avoid sex in marriage, that it in fact heals us of lust, right?
Yeah. I think he would regard that as like a kind of training ground. For like that kind of unself-interested self-gift that we see only perfectly accomplished in Christ.
All right, I want to get you back on sometime and do a full-on Augustine show.
Okay, let me give you one footnote. All right,
yeah, footnote.
Okay, maybe there's two, both by John Cavadini, C A.
Wait, is that guy down in the league office? I told those guys that I do not do footnotes on Shabbos. Sorry, go ahead.
It's a league game, Smokey.
So he's
no two articles of his. One there's like a content advisory for strong language. That's one called Feeling Right, Augustine on the Passions, and he puts Augustine in conversation with Andrea Dworkin. If you're familiar with Andrea Dworkin, we'll talk about her later. Okay. And in fact, John served a 5-year term on the ITC, right, the International Theological Committee in Rome. It's an advisory board.
And then when he moved to Hollywood, he had to go door to door.
He had to go door to door.
So many. I can't help it now. I'm over in Blavatsky.
I remember him saying to me, like, oh, I wonder if Pope Benedict read that article because of this stuff.
Really?
Yeah. But another one he wrote, Spousal Vision. Spousal Vision. It was in Augustinian Studies maybe in 2013
Cavallini?
Cavadini.
Cavadini.
Yeah, Cavadini.
All right.
Cavadini.
Cavadini. You got to do it with the... You know what my
molto Cavadini.
I love Cavadini. Like they do it, the baked Cavadini down at the
mi piace.
My Latin professor, my freshman year at TAC was Ben Weicker.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so he would always be like, no, people, we're doing pizza eater Latin here. You got to go like this. He'd hold his three fingers together and move it back and forth. Like, you know, laudare.
Well, you know,
laudare.
Like veni vidi vici sounds a lot better than weni vidi wiki.
Right. Weni vidi wiki.
Like get out of here, Caesar. I don't care how big your legions are.
Yeah, that exactly. It's just like, no, we're like weni vidi wiki. They're like,
hey. No wonder the barbarians took over the empire, man.
Exactly. Exactly. Totally.
Laos!
They're like, they have full throat.
This guy walks.
Right. All right. So off Augustine, I want to do a whole Augustine show because I want to talk to you, but I had the experience of reading Augustine. Like I remember reading Augustine like at the Contrapelagian stuff and just going like, I always wonder where like Calvin got that like really dark morbid side. I'm like, oh, he got it honest, sounds like. I mean, it's like I just had this like really like reaction to like, oh God, really? I mean, so there's a ton of Augustine stuff I want to throw at you at some point. So, but it's Holy Week, the week that is holy. And why is it holy? Because we're coming up to Easter. But the only way to get through Easter is to go through the cross. And so we're right down here in the old end of Lent.
Do you have any discounts, like, you know, half off deal on that cross
on
thing?
Cross, I just, no.
All right.
You got to pay full price. No, he's already paid the price for you, brother. And you need to just.
That's why he said, don't worry about taking up that cross, boys. I got it.
Right. He's like, you just got to accept Jesus Christ, your personal Lord and Savior, and just come on down here, put your knee in the dirt. Come on. No, it's like. That's what we should do. We should talk about the evangelical thing, too. So,
mock my great Uncle Joe one more time, Andrew.
Dude, I put my knee in the dirt. I walked the carpet. Man, we're both. So, I'm a revert. Are you a convert or a revert?
Convert.
Convert. He's convert. We're both verts. We're verting it up in here. We're vert. it's like, hey. Come on, this is a family.
You think this is a family podcast?
I watch my
mommy.
Buddies,
what's concupiscence?
I didn't watch my buddies die face down in the muck, so we could enjoy this nice family podcast. I'm staying. I'm finishing my podcast. Like so many Big Lebowski jokes. All right, so.
Magisterium has roundly rejected prior restraint.
It's just so rich. Oh, okay. Man, there's going to be like
Holy Week.
So there's going to be six people that are going to love this show. Everyone's going to be very confused. And then people are going to go watch The Big Lebowski, and they're going to be like, these Catholic guys recommended it. They said it was a family movie. It's not a family movie. Do not go see it. Lots of cussing, a couple of boobs. Don't go see it. All right, so go see it. It's good. Just don't show it to kids. What? No, did the mic pick that up? All right, so Holy Week. I want to get the early church kind of take on this. I mean, for one thing, we're coming into this whole process, going through Lent and the whole process leading up. This will be like the final loop, like the final push for these catechumens, right? They've been in a long process to come into the church, in the early church, right?
Yeah. Okay. So
a vigorous process. I wasn't even a quote. I'm just saying it was involved. I mean, it probably are involved.
They're pretty strict regimen.
A pretty strict regimen.
They got to keep their minds and souls limber.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Square on their theology.
So yeah, no. The process of the catechumenate varied significantly from region to region and century to century. You're going to get more footnotes this way, man. All right. How about Cyril of Jerusalem?
Cyril of Jerusalem.
Y'all know who Cyril of Jerusalem is, right?
Now, the guy was killer. He was a serial killer.
This is three centuries before my man Sophronius that I just talked about.
Dude, I want to hang out with someone. I want to name one of my kids Sophronius, dude.
I love Sophronius.
That's a great name.
Man, he didn't choose the times he lived in, having the Muslims knocking at the door. All right, so, but Cyril, right? Okay, now we're talking like mid-4th century.
Yeah.
Okay. He's Bishop of Jerusalem,
yeah.
And we happen to have the catechetical orations, the speeches that he gave to the catechumens during Lent.
Okay, so the catechumens, for my less technical listeners, are the people that are trying to become Catholics. And you're still today, if you go to Easter Vigil Mass, you're going to see people that are going to come into the church. These people are called catechumens. They've been going through the catechumenate.
Yeah, and here's a cool thing to call them, right? The Illuminandi. Not the Illuminati.
The Illuminandi.
Not the Illuminati. The Illuminandi. Those who are to be illumined. Those who are to be enlightened in baptism, right?
Salvete Illuminandi. I'm going to say that when I go. I see them all standing outside, you know?
They're going to think you're awesome.
They're going to be like, that guy
knows what's
rocks.
Up.
I'm so glad
I'm entering the Catholic Church.
They got one guy just goes and gets in his car, just drives off. He's like, I'm done. I was on the edge, and that's the last straw.
So one big difference between the early church and today is now we have like our rehearsals for the Easter Vigil. So you get together, and you know, Father kind of like walks you through everything. Now you're going to stand over here, and we're going to say this prayer.
Right.
You're going to come here. They've already explained to you what baptism is going to be like, which is, you know, just like the little pouring over the back of your head.
Most of the time. Whole different ballgame in the early church.
Right? Okay, man. And here's what would happen. If you were a catechumen about to enter the church, like in what, 3 days from now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You would have heard of baptism. Like we don't want to overstate this, right? Like they know a little bit about it, but not much. So here's what had happened. You get there Saturday night, depending on where you lived, you maybe hadn't bathed during Lent.
Right.
You're on like this strict fasting regimen. You've been continent. Even if you're married, it's like hardcore. You're ready for this. This isn't just like giving up Netflix, right?
This is hardcore.
This is hardcore. And you would go for this vigil, right? So think like middle of the night. Right. There's candles. You're hearing all these readings and chanting and stuff. And then you get led into a place you've never been before. You're stripped down. You're anointed with oil all over your body.
Yeah, well, by stripped down, you mean you're naked, right?
You're naked.
And you get anointed with oil.
You're naked because you're stripping off the old man.
And
right?
This just came up because this is the references to deaconesses.
Yeah, a big part of their job was
someone to
anoint the women.
Anoint the women, right? Yeah. And that is what they were doing. They weren't the same thing as these deacons, but they had to.
That's right. I mean, they were an order, but they were not part of the sacrament of holy orders. The Council of Nicaea actually explicitly talks about them in the canons of the Council of Nicaea.
Okay, now hold on a second.
All right,
we're about to get to the break, and when we come back, we've got a bunch of people stripped down naked, get anointed with oil. We're going to find out what happens to them after the
Stay
break.
Tuned.
Stay tuned. Same coffee boy time. Same scatter position time. Same camera position channel. All right. We'll see you right after the break. You're listening to
Marble Stone. I take your place, Marble Stone. I take your place, Marble Stone.